Hariom to all of you. As we are going through the final verses of chapter 7, one thing we have to recall about this chapter is the important message that Krishna gave here was he explained to us the very nature of God, Ishvara Swarupam. And we were told that this Ishvara Swarupam is a combination of Para Prakriti, which is consciousness, and Apara Prakriti, which is matter. The matter portion of the Lord transforms itself into this entire creation. And the consciousness portion of the Lord also is available in this creation. That means what? This whole creation is nothing but God. Both his lower nature and higher nature are there, right in this creation. And if we want to experience the lower nature of God in our own physical, in our selves, which is the lower nature of God? The body, the mind, intellect, etc. And to experience the higher nature of God within ourselves, what is this consciousness? What is this? How do you experience this life force?
First, being able to see and feel.
Your eye is apara prakriti. It is inert matter. The very fact that your eyes can see is because the consciousness gives power to the eye to see. The consciousness gives power to the ears to hear. The very same consciousness gives power to the tongue to speak. So there is a combination even in us of these two natures of God. Now, if we want to experience anything, supposing I tell you that I've seen the splendor of Mount Kinabalu, which is in Sabah, right? And you want to experience it, what do you have to do? You have to make a travel. It's a distance that you have to travel in order to experience something, right? But where is this God? In us. So does it require any travel? No. Okay. There are some things you want to experience. They are within you, but you can't experience now. Example, if I am a child and I want to experience adulthood, how do I experience adulthood? I have to wait for some time, right? Over a period of time, eventually I will experience adulthood. So either if you want to experience something, it may require you to travel, or it may require a gestation of time. But where is this Ishvara? Neither do you need to travel, neither do you need time to realize that Ishvara. So why is it that we don't realize? So for this, the scriptures say that there are three defects, there are three obstacles for us, even though Ishvara is right here. There are three obstacles. And what are the obstacles?
Hinduism is so easy. I say three, everybody say three. If I say four, you say what? Four Vedas. Very simple. Okay. So the three obstacles are mala, vikshepa, and avaran. What is mala? What is mala? Not mala, anybody say mala, you have to worry. Mala. Mala is dirt. What is vikshepa? Turbulence, or you can say restlessness. And finally, there is avarana, which is veil, or what we express as ignorance. Now, let us understand from a simple standpoint. Supposing there is a lake
and in this lake, at the bottom of the lake, there is a diamond. There are three reasons. If you may not know the existence or the value of the diamond only for three reasons. One is mala, if the lake is dirty. Second is vikshepa, if the lake waters are turbulent. Third is avarana, if you have ignorance, you do not know what is the value of a diamond. You may look at it and think it's just a piece of glass. So out of your ignorance, you don't understand the value of the diamond. Now, applying that to us, what does the lake symbolize? The mind. What does the diamond symbolize? The Atman. There are three reasons, therefore, even though the Atman is within us, we cannot realize it. Why? Because one is mala, which is the dirt of the mind. What is this dirt of the mind? All the various impurities. And what is the biggest impurity? Bigger than the ego. Desires, karma. Karma is said to be our biggest dirt of the mind, the biggest impediment. But although the scriptures tell us that there are six evils. One is karma, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, and matsarya. So, although there are said to be six impurities of the mind, however, all these five are actually nothing but a byproduct of karma. How do we say that? We know that when desire is not satisfied or we cannot fulfill certain desires, depending on the intensity of the desire, when there is an obstruction, will be the resultant krodha or anger or disappointment or agitation. So what is krodha? It is nothing but uninterrupted desire. There is no desire, there is no krodha. What is lobha? Greed. So how is it connected to desire? Unending desires. When desires keep on growing and growing and they are out of your control, they become lobha or greed. And the scriptures have told us that the more you go on satisfying your desires, it's like pouring ghee into the fire. So that's what it happens. Until the fire becomes inflamed, that is lobha, greed, out of control. Then we have moha. What is moha? Delusion. What is delusion? How is it related to our desire? Not really attachment. How is it related to desire? Our delusion is the more desires are satisfied, the more happier I become. Or our delusion is also that happiness lies in the external, not in the internal. This is our own delusion. We search for happiness in the outside world. So that is called moha. Again, it is as a result of our desires that causes this moha. What is mada? What? Arrogance. Why would you be arrogant? When you look down upon people who have less than you. So the more desires you have, the more you satisfy your desires, you look down upon people, you compare with people who have less than you, and that gives you that arrogance or mada. And what is matsarya? Envy or jealousy, which occurs when you compare yourself with people who have more than you. So mada is you compare to people who have less than you, matsarya, envy or jealousy is when you start comparing to people who have more than you. Despite satisfying so many desires, I still find others have more than me. So it inflames your desires even further. So therefore, all these are a cause of mala or dirt. The main cause is karma or desires. Then what is vikshepa? Because of these desires, our mind is constantly restless. As you remember in chapter 6, one of the verses, Arjuna told Krishna, Chanchalam hi manaha Krishna. Hey Krishna, the manaha, the mind is chanchalam, it is so unsteady, I can't control it. You are asking me to meditate, this mind is so chanchalam. Because of what? The endless desires. And then avarana is nothing but our state of ignorance. So therefore, even though the Atman is within us, we are unable to experience because of these three reasons of mala, vikshepa and avarana. Now that is the problem. Next question, what is the solution? So what is the solution? I only gave you the problem. Now what is the solution? So for mala, karma, desire, which causes the mala, the dirt. When we talk about karma, what type of desire is it? What type of desire are we talking about here? The nature of the desire. Not dharmic, what else? Selfish desires. These are selfish desires. Selfless desires are okay. Selfish desires are the one that cause the dirt in the mind. So if the problem is selfish desires, what is the remedy? Cultivate selfless desires. What is another name for selfless desires? Chapter 3, what was the title of chapter 3? Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is doing actions motivated by selfless desires. The more karma yoga we do, we dilute the selfish desires. So what is antidote for mala, the dirt of the mind, is karma yoga sadhana. Vikshepa means restlessness of the mind. The mind cannot sit still, the mind cannot concentrate, the mind cannot fix itself to something. What is the remedy for vikshepa? Upasana yoga. What is upasana? All types of mantras we chant, we go to temple, prayers we do, rituals we do, bhajans we sing. What is the purpose? Is to fix our mind to God or whatever image of God. So all these help us to focus and fix our mind. The word upasana is two words, as I've told you before. Asana is to sit, upa is near, which means to bring your mind nearer to God. That is the purpose of all the rituals, the mantras, the prayers, etc. And therefore, that would solve the problem of vikshepa. And for avarana, which is ignorance, there is only one remedy, that is jnana yoga. Through knowledge, you understand first what is the self. Only when you know what is the self, then can you work to experience the self. Otherwise, you have total ignorance of the self. So this is what basically, although Krishna said that my lower and higher prakriti is transformed as this creation, yet people do not come to my higher nature. Most of the time we are pursuing the lower nature of God, which is a God with form. We worship the Lord with form, but our worship is only mainly for more worldly things. So now from verses from verses 20 onwards to 29, up to end of this chapter, Krishna is dividing the category of worshippers into two groups. First, from verse 20 up to verse number 26, from verse 20 to 26, he will talk about one category of worshippers called the Sakama Bhaktas. So, kama is desire, sakama means motivated by their desires, they worship me. This type of bhakti, sakama bhakti, Krishna says is okay. There's nothing wrong to worship God because we have certain needs to be fulfilled. There is nothing wrong to worship. So Krishna will tell us what is the pros of such a kind of worship. At the same time, he tells us what is the disadvantage of such a type of worship. So sakama bhakti has both positive and negative effects. Then in verses 28 and 29, Krishna will speak about nishkama bhakti. Nishkama, kama is desire, nish means devoid of desire, where one only desires God, nishkama bhakti. And for nishkama bhakti, there are only advantages, there are no disadvantages. So this Krishna will explain that although he said bhakti is the only way to overcome, because we are so engrossed in this lower prakriti. Why are we so engrossed in this lower prakriti? Because it contains the three gunas, the sattvic, rajasic, tamasic gunas. As a result, this whole world appears so attractive, so colorful, it attracts our attention. So much so that we chase power, we chase money, we chase fame, we chase position, everything we chase which is available in lower prakriti, but we cannot detach ourselves and come to the higher nature of God. But Krishna told us what in verse number 14 of this chapter. If you look at verse number 14, he said, page 141, verily this divine maya, this illusion, meaning the lower prakriti with the three gunas, is made of the gunas, is hard to conquer. But those who take refuge in me, that means through devotion to Lord, they can cross it. But devotion also we discuss is what? Of different levels. Some are devoted to Lord just to worship Him again for worldly needs. That's why He divides the devotees into sakama and nishkama bhakti. So it is only nishkama bhakti that can bring us to Lord, not sakama bhakti. So now we started looking at sakama bhakti from verse number 20, and we finished verses 20 and 21, right, last week?
Yeah.
Okay. So let us just recap these two verses on nishkama bhakti. In verse number 20, he says, this nishkama bhaktas are kamai. Kamis meaning what? Kama is desire. But these bhaktas have got kamis, which means multiple desires. They have endless amount of desires. They are carried away by so many desires, running here and there and chasing after their desires. So they give priority to dharma, kama, artha. These are the three priorities of life. In fact, earlier on also in chapter 2, Krishna spoke about such kind of devote, that such kind of people. If you go back to chapter 2, verse 43, page 44. Chapter 2, verse 43, page 44. Such kind of nishkama bhaktas who are so engrossed with their desires, he says what in verse 43, page 44, obsessed with desires, they hold that the ultimate goal of birth and action is to attain heaven. And thus there are many rituals and prayers given in the Vedas that if you want to attain heaven, also there are certain rituals and prayers you can do. So all the while they are pursuing these kind of rituals and prayers in order to attain either worldly benefits or heavenly benefits. Thus Krishna says, what is the result? They prapadyante, the word prapadyante appears in line 2 of verse 20, anya devata. Prapadyante means they worship other deities. Now what was the definition of other deities which we discussed last week? When he says other deities means they worship other gods besides Krishna. What is the definition of the other deities? So does that mean we only should worship Krishna? So what does anya devata mean? God with form. Krishna is also a God with form, but here he is saying that they worship other deities. What is the definition of other deities? Those who pursue the gods for finite goals. So Anya Devata, we must be very careful, otherwise people will think that from standpoint of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna stands for infinite goals. All other devatas stand for finite goals. If we take the Shiv Purana says Lord Shiva is the infinite, whereas all other devas are the finite. So here what actually Anya Devata means is that those devotees who pursue finite goals, they worship varieties of devas. Therefore, your motive for worship is very important. You must understand that. If you worship Shiva for finite goals, what type of devata does Shiva become? Finite devata. If you worship Shiva for infinite goal, what type of devata does Shiva become? He becomes infinite. So your motive of worship is very important. We should not take this as saying that only Krishna is the ultimate God, all the others are other gods. No. Here what is referring to is your motive of worship. Why? Because they are carried away by desires. They are carried away by selfish desires. So they worship varieties of gods, and as a result of their worship, what happens? He uses the word Rita Jnanaha. You see in the first line, Rita Jnanaha. So Rita Jnanaha means these desires take away their wisdom, their power to discriminate. Because their desires are so strong, they rob away this person's wisdom. And why does Krishna say that? The same amount of effort. You see, if you want to achieve something, there are certain rituals you have to follow, there are certain mantras you have to chant, certain offerings you have to make, certain people you may have to feed, some people you may have to feed the birds, or this, so much of effort is involved. Imagine Krishna says, the same effort you put, what do you get from that effort? You get only finite results. Because after you pray and worship for something, you get it. Are you happy? No. You come back again to another need, and then again you have to do various other prayers and rituals. Same effort we put in for all this, the same time and effort we put in to gain knowledge, what will we gain? We gain the infinite goal. So that's why Krishna says their desires rob away their level of discrimination, their intelligence. Yes?
Everyone has finite as well as infinite.
Impossible. If you have finite desires, you will be so happy inward that you will have no need for infinite desires, isn't it? Supposing, if you have, what is your favorite food?
Rice.
Give me some other favorite. Rice everybody like.
Biryani.
Okay, biryani. I give you one plate of biryani. You are very happy. I give you two plates of biryani. Very happy. I give you 10 plates of biryani. Very, very full. Now somebody comes with the most delicious biryani. Can you eat? Why? Because you are totally full. So pursuing finite is what? Purnatva. Purnatva means your happiness is totally full. You have no more desire to experience anything. Of course, whatever comes, you take it. But you do not hanker for it. You do not go out of your way for it. So, pursuing finite desires, what happens? Infinite desires disappear. They become no more important in our lives. But because we are pursuing infinite desires, that's why we have no desire for the finite. Until we understand the limitations of infinite desire.
The analogy you have given is about food.
Yeah.
I accept it.
Yeah.
Supposing it's like money.
Same.
Now
if I fulfill my finite desire, that means I depend on my security, on God, I still do my work, but I don't hanker for more money, more fame, more power, more position. Because why? I only found my happiness in God. You understand? So, whatever you hanker for, as long as you have found the finite desire, your happiness is found from God, then there is no more hankering. That doesn't mean you stop working. You do. But you surrender everything to God.
So this is what exactly I meant. That why you are pursuing, you know, your worldly pursuits.
Right.
While you are following them, you right. can still have infinite.
Yeah, you can have. But there is no more hankering. You are not driven by those desires. Whereas these people, karmas, they are driven by their desires. Yeah. You have to speak a bit louder because this guy is.
We are married, we have children,
yeah.
We have a career, we have so many things we have to do. We cannot, at this stage in life, we're only looking at finite. You know, we have space, my son has one space, my child has to get married.
Correct, yes.
So it's so difficult to say, I follow only this. You seem to be like overlapping.
See. Can start with both, right? But supposing if you understand that no matter how many things I ask Ganesha, next 10 years I'll still be praying for those things. Because there is no end to finite goods. But if I have total faith in Ganesha, if I totally surrender to Ganesha, then what do I tell Ganesha? I leave it to you. You take care of everything. Isn't it? That is total surrender. That is finite good. I leave everything in your hands. My children, my house, everything I leave in your hands. I only want you. Means I surrender everything totally to you. That is called finite. Right? So until we reach that level where we can totally surrender, we don't want to ask anything from Lord because we've totally surrendered everything into His hands. That is when you are going for the finite. Why? Because you have understood that I can keep on praying. It's not that we don't want to pray. We can keep on praying. But that understanding that the more I keep on praying, is never going to end here. Because my desires are never going to be ever fulfilled. After children, there is grandchildren. After grandchildren, there is great-grandchildren. Isn't it? When is it going to end? So this is our own realization. In the beginning, we don't have that much of faith. So what do? We ask for this, we ask for that, we ask for this. But one day has to come and we say, I don't want to ask for anything. I totally just surrender everything into your hands. Whatever you give, I consider it coming from you, which means that is what you've decided for me. So when we pray, normally we say, oh Lord, let my will be done. I'll tell you what I want. This I've done. Let my will be done. This is what I want, you just follow. But what should we say? Oh Lord, let
I
will be done. Not my will be done, let I will be done. So that surrender is going to take time. That's why he said earlier, he says one is to pass through maybe several lifetimes to come to that level of understanding that I'm totally just surrendering everything to you. I don't want to ask anything. To reach that level of surrender.
But when you reach that level of surrender, are you not going to be less motivated to do your daily work?
Then you must read chapter 2 verse 47. So that you are continuously motivated to do your work, you only surrender the results to God, not your actions to God. Okay? It's not easy, that's why it's got something you've got to keep on thinking and cultivating slowly, slowly, little by little by little. If you are persistent on the path, you will come to it. So, okay, karma. So that is what happens. They are taken away. Their wisdom is taken away. And what is the result of such what you call prayers? He says they follow tam niyamam astaya. Astaya means they follow. This is in verse 20. Astaya means they follow niyamam. Whatever the relevant methods, whatever puja is required, whatever offerings are required, whatever rules and regulations they follow. Because why? They are driven by their desires to achieve the results. And thus Krishna says they are guided by their own prakatiya. Prakatiya means by their own nature. by their grief, by their desires, their prayers are actually only for one purpose, is to satisfy their selfish desires. Then in verse number 21, which we discussed last week, Krishna says, Bhaktah yam yam tanum architum icchati. Bhakta means this devotee is, whichever yam yam, which means whichever tanum, tanum means form, whichever devata you pray to, architum means to worship, okay, icchati with desires, whatever this devotee worships with desires, whichever form he decides to pray to, it is okay, says Krishna. But what is the important quality we must have? Faith, shraddhaya, with faith. With faith, you pray to whichever devata you want, and what you call, you follow the rules and regulations of the prayer. What happens, he says, tasya tasya shradam aham viddadami. Aham, Krishna is saying, here Krishna is who now? When Krishna says aham, what is this aham? Is the Supreme Consciousness, meaning Brahman, not the Krishna form, but the Supreme Consciousness. So now he is talking on that level. Aham viddadami, I make achalam steady. What do I make steady? That very faith of the devotee. He prays with that faith. I make his faith steady. I meaning the Supreme Consciousness. So just like you go to a government department, you submit the application form to a clerk. But who has to finally approve the form? He has to send it to the senior officer inside. You don't see the senior officer. But he approves it, then what happened? You think that the clerk has done all the work. But they need a senior officer to sign. So that's what Krishna is saying. I make the faith of that devotee steady, achalam. How does he make the faith steady? By fulfilling that desire. So once I fulfill your desire, see, with faith you pray. Prayer brings results. What happens to your faith? Gets stronger. Again with that faith you pray, your desires are fulfilled. What happens to your faith? Gets more stronger. So that's why you see certain temples, certain gurus, certain swamijis, certain places, they get very popular. They say you go there, your wishes will be fulfilled. But because people have prayed with faith. So faith, fulfill wishes, makes the faith more and more stronger also. The faith is reinforced. Now, then what happens? So he says, I make that faith of the devotee firm. Okay, now we go to verse number 22, today's verse, where he says, whichever God you invoke, ultimately it is the imperishable Brahman is the one who will fulfill all your wishes. However, the devotee who is worshipping a particular deity with desires, with faith, when the wish gets fulfilled, what will the devotee say? That God, that devata fulfilled my wishes. This is what Krishna is trying to say. That devotee, because of his limited knowledge, limited understanding, with faith he has prayed, the wish gets fulfilled, he will say that devata, whoever it is, he or she has granted my wishes. So, if a Shiva bhakta prays to Shiva, his wishes are fulfilled, he will say Shiva has blessed me. If Ganesha Bhakta, you say Ganesha has blessed me, or Krishna Bhakta, you say Krishna has blessed me. So here Krishna says, Sa Tahya Shraddhaya Yukta Saha Tahya. He who with steady Shraddha, with steady faith, endowed, Yukta means endowed with steady faith, Tasya Aradhanam Sa Ihate. Tasya means of that form which he worships. Aradhana means worship that particular form. He performs all kinds of worship. And the more he worships, the more his wishes are fulfilled, the more his faith increases, the more he keeps on worshipping. And therefore, Krishna says, Tatha Kaman Labhate. Labhate means he will attain Kaman. Kaman here stands for all the objects of his desires. Whatever he desired, he will obtain. He will get that. Because why? He had faith. And he followed the procedure of the rituals. So all his desires, whatever it is, they will be fulfilled. Now, but in reality, who is fulfilling these desires? The Supreme Brahman. The Supreme Brahman. So Krishna says, Mayaihi eva vihitan kaman. Vihitan here, the word vihitan means the desires, kaman, the desires are dispensed by my eva. My eva means by me alone, Krishna saying. By me alone, I am the dispenser of the desires. I am the one who gives the approval for the desires. I am the one who is actually dispensing all the desires. And if we just quickly take a look at when Krishna says me, let's look at chapter 8 verse 4 to understand who is this me. If you look at chapter 8 verse 4, page 151, here Brahman, Krishna is talking about the very nature of Brahman. And here he says in chapter 8 verse 4, in the third line, if you look at the third line, Aham Adi Yajna Atra Eva. I am, Aham I am. Adi Yajna means receiver of all your sacrifices. Where? Evam Atra. Atra means in your body. That means whatever prayers you are offering to that deity, actually it is that Lord who is within you, who is a receiver of all your yajnas and all your prayers. Because that Lord is everywhere. He is outside and he is inside. So Krishna says, I as Brahman am actually residing in your body as the Adi Yajna. Whatever prayers and worship you are offering, I seated within you, I am receiving, I am hearing all your prayers. I am receiving all your prayers. So the Adi Yajna is going to be identified in chapter 8 as Brahman. So when Krishna says Aham I, it refers to Brahman, not this Krishna form. So the results of all your pujas, all your prayers is received ultimately by this imperishable Brahman. So what does this tell us? She wants a mantra. Yeah, it's okay. I don't need much. So, therefore, what does this tell us? Sakama bhakti, having bhakti for Lord with desires, is a valid form of bhakti. We should not feel guilty. We should not feel that we should not be asking. Go ahead and ask whatever you want. That is the advantage of this bhakti. But important, you must have faith. And you must follow the rules and regulations. So Krishna himself is saying there's no problem. Have faith. Follow the rules and regulations. Pray, your wishes will be granted. Now that is their plus point. But now he's going to tell us what is the disadvantage of such a bhakti in verse number 23. So here in verse number 23, Krishna says that although all the desires of devotees are fulfilled by me, the imperishable Brahman, however, please understand that all the prayers which are answered, there are three defects in them. You must understand what you are getting. You know, like when you sign contract, they say what? Read the fine line. Any lawyers here, they will tell you. Read the fine line. Don't just see the contract and sign it. So, he says, understand that there are three doshas or defects. Doshas means defects. So, what are the defects? Even if you obtain heaven also, there is a dosha, there is a defect. Leave alone all your worldly joys or gains or whatever you accept. And what are the three doshas? Number one, all the pleasures that you seek are mixed equally with the amount of pain. Every happiness you receive has got some mixture of pain in it. Why? Everything, what you pray for, you get. That's pleasurable. But in that pleasure, there is some mixture of pain in it also. Sorry? It is temporary, no doubt, yes. First of all, to attain it, what not you have to go through, isn't it? There are so many things that you have to do, so many mantras you have to chant, so many prayers you have to sit down. I was told there is a temple here for $5,000, you go and pay, you can attain Swargaloka. But there is a waiting list of 5 years. So there are people lining up here. I was told really there's about 5,000 ringgit fee. You pray, then they do elaborate prayers, then you can attain Swargaloka, which is probably there in our Vedas. But
at the same time, I think now this, what you're saying now, that it is nice. This has to be seen in the context, because just prayer enough, you know, at the other places, we have heard that just prayer enough is not going well.
Right, right.
You do Karma Yoga also.
Yes.
Which is not said here.
Right.
I think we need to just faith, prayer or faith is not going well.
No, faith alone is okay, because that's what he's saying. You have faith and follow the procedure. That means even if you don't do Karma Yoga, what you are doing here is Upasana Yoga, right? With faith you are praying. You have a problem. With faith you go to temple, you pray with faith. God will answer your prayers.
So I want a PhD, so I don't need to work.
That Karma Yoga. That is not Karma Yoga, that is Karma. That is not Karma Yoga. That is Karma.
You say need to do yoga.
You need to do your karma.
Chapter 2 verse 47. Chapter 2 verse 47. Don't forget that. Karma, not Karma Yoga. Okay, so what are the doshas? First, to get that, you have to go through a lot of effort also, right? Then, when you get it, there's also the tension. How long will this last? Right? How long can I hold on to it? You pray for power, you get power. Then you also worried about somebody trying to topple you from power also. So worry also is there. To get it, there's problem. To hold on to it, there's problem. And ultimately, when it also is gone, it gives you more sorrow also. So therefore, understand whatever you get, there is pleasure in it, but mixed with it is a little bit of pain also. So that you have to understand. There is some sukham, but it's always mixed with some dukham. That is the first effect. Second, as you all mentioned, every accomplishment is finite, limited. We can never enjoy whatever we have, because there will always be something else that pops up in our mind. Right? As we have seen that whatever we pray for, there will always be something else we are going to ask for. So every pleasure has got a finite limit of pleasure. And number three, that's the second dosha. Number three, once we are used to it, this becomes the biggest problem. Once we are used to it, to this name, fame, attention, we get addicted to it. We want to hold on to it. We don't want to lose it. So whatever you keep asking, whatever you get, you are so immersed in it, you don't want to lose it. By all costs, you hang on to it. So all this is a result of what? Sakama Bhakti. Therefore, what will Sakama Bhakti do? It will keep you constantly entangled in the samsara only in this world. Now, therefore, advantage is what? Material progress is there. That is the advantage of Sakama Bhakti. You ask for money, power, position, fame, material progress is there. You can fulfill your desires, money is there, power is there, everything is there. What is the disadvantage? Sorry? Sukha and dukkha, yes. What else? You have material progress, but spiritually you stagnate. You never progress spiritually. You don't go downwards. Why? Because you are praying to God. You don't spiritually decline. You also don't spiritually go up, but spiritually you stagnate. So there are three types of what we call prayers when we do. One is or actions that we do, sorry, not prayers, action. One is called Nishida Karma. Nishida Karma means when we do forbidden actions, lying, stealing, etc., forbidden action. In Nishida Karma, forbidden actions, spiritually we decline, we go backwards. That's Nishida Karma. In Sakama Karma, when we do selfless actions, we progress spiritually. So Nishida, you decline spiritually. Sakama, you progress spiritually. But when you do Nishkama, you progress spiritually. But when you do Sakama Karmas, you stagnate. So neither do you progress, neither do you fall backwards, but you never ever move from where you are. because you are continuously caught in this cycle. So Krishna therefore says here in verse 23, Tesham, Tesham meaning those people, the Sakama Bhaktas, those who pray with desires, Alpamedasam. The word Alpamedasam here is in the second line, which means these type of devotees, the Sakama Bhaktas, they are not intelligent Bhaktas. They lack the power to think carefully, clearly. They don't have a clear rationale. They lack indiscrimination. Why? Because they have chosen the finite goal instead of the infinite goal. It is just like I offer you gold and silver. What do? You take the silver and you throw away the gold. You have discarded the infinite goal for what? The finite goal. So that's why he calls them Alpamedasam. They can get the infinite goal, but they have given that up and then they chase the finite goal.
That's because of their gunas.
Because of their gunas, because of their desires and all that. So they are chasing the finite goals. That's why he classifies them as Alpamedasam. Their only desire is material goals. And what is the tragedy of these material goals? He says, phalam antavat tat. Tat means that result, the phalam, the fruit they get, is antavat. Antavat has got two words there. Antavat means there is a beginning and there is an end. Every pleasure that you get, every prayer that you pray for, whatever you get, there is a beginning and there is also an end. Because every prayer is limited by time, every result also is limited by time. So antavat. Whatever the highest position you get, you can even, do you know that you can even get the position of Lord Indra if you want? Do you know that? There are prayers, if you do it, you can get the position of Lord Indra. But what happens? Another fellow comes, he will throw you off from there, you will come back again. So momentarily you can get the pleasure of even being Lord Indra in heaven. So all that are there, whatever position, but it is all antavat, it is all limited. Even that one day you have to give up and come back to this earth also. Now, whose fault is this? Can we blame God for it?
No.
Because what is Krishna saying? You ask for it. Right. Now, supposing somebody comes to your house and is not eaten for 5 days and he says, sir, give me some food to eat. And you bring him to your kitchen, you make him sit down, and then you bring the Bhagavad Gita, tell him, let's chant chapter 12. What does he want?
Food.
He wants food. You give him food. He's not asking you for knowledge. Why are you wasting time giving him knowledge? So if you pray to God for finite goals, why would he want to give you the infinite goals? You have no appreciation for infinite goals. So don't blame. Krishna says, don't blame me. I am ready to offer you infinite, but you are asking for finite. So I will grant you according to what you ask for. Yes. No, no. Asura never pray for infinite.
No,
Yes, exactly. Nobody can kill me and I want power and this and that. And eventually what happens? They also get killed in one way or the other also. So now he says what here? Devan Deva Yajo Yanti. Deva Yajo, the worshippers of gods, again gods means finite goals, the word here represents finite goals. Deva Yajo means worshipper of gods, of finite goals. They Yanti means they reach Deva. Those who worship the Devas reach the Devas. Meaning what again? Symbolic language. If you worship for finite goals, you will attain the finite goals. Whether it is on earth, you worship for power, money, possession, you get. Whether it is in the higher lokas, you want the position of the Devas, you will get that. But that is what you will get. So finite results will give you finite goals. But Krishna says, Mad Bhakta, my devotees. Again, Mad Bhakta means not Krishna devotees. Mad Bhakta means those who aim for the infinite goal, who who worship the imperishable Brahman, Mad Bhakta, those who seek the infinite goal, meaning what? Those who have a desire for moksha. Out of the four goals, the other people who go to the devas only worship dharma, kama, artha. But those who worship for moksha, what does he say? Mam api yanti. Yanti means they will attain mam, they will attain me. Which means what? They will attain moksha. There is no rebirth for such devotees. Krishna here represents the infinite goals. Worshippers of finite goals go to finite. Worshippers of infinite go to infinite. In fact, in chapter 8, he will tell us that when we depart the world, there are two directions. One is called the direction of light. One is called direction of darkness. Direction of darkness, you come back. Direction of light, you don't come back. Okay? So, what is it? Six lokas above earth and seven below, right?
So, according to your merits, you go from
the higher lokas, yes. So, the initial lokas here is called Ru Loka, right? Then you have Bhuva, Swaha, Maha, Jana, Tapas, Satya. There are six lokas on top of Bhu Loka. Bhu Loka is the earth we are in now. So if you go to Bhuva Loka, is where all the saints and sages reside. Bhuva, Swaha, Swaha is where the devas reside. So the higher and higher and higher you go means the more greater the pleasures, the more greater the enjoyments. Until the highest is called Satya Loka. Bhuva, Swaha, Maha, Jana, Tapas, Satya. But even that also you have to come back. But there is a way not to come back. I will tell you the secret in chapter 8. So, that is the seven lokas. Then you have below earth, you have Atala, Vitala, Talatala, Rasatala, Mahatala, Patala. I got it correct. There are seven. The lowest is called Patala, hell. So, there are seven layers of hell also. Again, the more lower you go, the more severe the punishment, the more severe the problems you have. Okay? But eventually, whichever way you go up or down, you come back again to Bhuloka. Okay? So, now we've seen that Sakama Bhakti is a valid form of bhakti. It can give you results, but the problem is we get stuck in it. We keep on going back and back and back into the same form of bhakti. We never progress spiritually. Now, in verse number 24, Krishna points out that this majority of worshippers, they have not really understood my real nature. As in the beginning, what did Krishna say? I have two natures. I have the lower nature and the higher nature. They understand my lower nature. They worship that. But they do not understand my higher nature, which is para prakriti, which is consciousness. So these people who don't understand the higher nature of God, therefore, what happens? When they don't understand this higher nature of God, what happens? They look upon God as with forms. Because they don't understand God as formless. So they can only comprehend Lord up to that level that God has taken a form. Okay? So that God, the real God is one who has got a physical form. So when I look upon God as a personality with a body, what happens? There are limitations to my understanding of God. God is limited by time and space. God is in my altar, God is in my temple, that is only what I can understand only. But I cannot understand that actually God is all pervading, He is everywhere. So, Krishna says now, these type of devotees only understand my lower nature. And the lower nature we have seen is subject to arrival and departure. We read the stories, Lord Rama came, Lord Rama went. You read Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna came, Lord Krishna also went. So every avatar comes, every avatar also goes. So what now he says in verse number 24, Abuddhaya. Buddhi means those who have intelligence, those who have intellect. Abuddhaya means those who lack discrimination. Meaning those who only consider God as the lower form, as the one with the finite form. So he says, manyate mam, they think of me. Manyate means they think of me as what? Vyaktim appanam. Vyakti means what? Which has form, which has taken form. But actually, what is God's essence? He says, I am avyaktam. They look upon, they do not see my unmanifest form. They think that there is only a manifest form of God. That this is the form of God. I can only accept this. Now, this is where we all seem to get into conflicts with each other. You know, when somebody says Shiva is the only God, Krishna is the only God, Vishnu is the only God, no, Ganesha is the only God. We get so engrossed in these God forms that we don't understand that all these God forms are actually nothing but a manifestation of that one Brahman. So we should not, on the contrary, have conflict with each other. We should be able to worship whichever God form we want. And then come to that understanding that this God whom I worship is not only this form, but is this form and more. Then there is no confusion in our mind. Then who is the real God? Is Shiva the real God? Is Krishna the real God? Is Ganesha the real God? Is Devi the real goddess? Who is the real God then? If we understand that all these are various manifestations of God, we will not get confused. That there is only ultimately one unmanifest God. Then of course the question will be there, why do we have so many God forms? Why do we need to worship? And that Krishna explains actually in chapter 12. Arjuna will ask him, is it better to worship God with form or worship God without form? And that Krishna will explain in chapter 12. So here he says, they think of me as taken form when in reality I am formless. I am avyaktam, I am unmanifest in my nature. And that's why in fact when we read the Purana sometimes we must understand that there are many stories like this when they show devotees sometimes they are in trouble, then they go and worship, then God comes, then he hammers the rakshas, and then what happens? He goes away. So what happened? God comes, finishes his work, goes away. But actually in reality, God has never come and God has never gone away, because why? He is omnipresent. He is present all the time. That particular form is taken is only for a particular purpose. Like when Ravan took the boon that he could not be killed by devas, he could not be killed by asuras, what type of form did God have to take? Human form, Lord Rama form. So he came with that purpose, was to kill Ravan. So every form of God that has come has got a purpose behind it. When they finish the purpose, they go back to their original form, which is the unmanifest form. So here he says, ajanantaha, they are unaware, they are totally ignorant of what? Mama param bhavam. Mama means my, param higher bhavam nature. They are totally ignorant, they are unaware of my higher form, which is not this physical body, which is made of all the elements. But this God does not have a date of birth and a date of death. Right? So when we celebrate Janmashtami, what are we celebrating? Birthday of God. But God is there all the time. Okay? So let us understand that, and when we celebrate, we will understand the nature of that. So the higher nature people do not know, which is avyayam, which is eternal. When we say eternal means what? Never subject to change. But if we look at Krishna, is Krishna subject to change? You saw baby Krishna, then you see youth Krishna, then disappearing Krishna, here to go away. So all the God forms you can see, they have got different, manifestations. Ganesha has got so many kind of manifestations. That means what? Form is subject to change. But he says, my higher form, my real form is avyayam. It is eternal. Eternal means that is never subject to change. It is changeless. And therefore, Krishna says, anu uttamam. Uttamam means the highest. Anu uttamam means the most highest. There is nothing higher than that. So the most supreme form, which is eternal. Now, let's go to verse 25. So Krishna's higher nature is consciousness, which is ever present. Krishna's lower nature is the physical body, which comes and goes. Therefore, if consciousness is ever present and higher nature of God is ever present, how come the human beings cannot understand this and they run after the inferior lower nature of God? So here he says, Yoga Maya Samavrita. This Maya of mine, Maya here meaning the three gunas, is very powerful. It is very colorful. It is very attractive. Now it is, as he said earlier in this chapter, Maya is a power of God. Power of God for what? To create. He uses this Maya to create a wonderful world, a beautiful world. It is for us to understand He has created the world for us for a purpose. So we should not get lost in it, we should not get engrossed in it, but understand the purpose of the world. But he says people are samavritaha. Samavrita means they get totally lost in this world, in this Maya of mind, in this lower nature of mind. So this Maya, which consists of the three gunas, that's what we call Maya, deludes people, it tempts people. Many people get carried away by this, and thus their discrimination gets clouded. But he says, Aham sarvasya na prakasha, na prakasha. Aham sarvasya, my higher nature, na prakasha means it does not manifest. Because what is his higher nature? It is unmanifest. His lower nature is manifest, what we can see. But his higher nature, which is where? It is in lower nature, but why we cannot see it? Because it is unmanifest. So, and thus he says people are mudaha, they get easily deluded. Okay? So now, here he is still talking about the sakama bhaktas, who pursue the finite goals in life. Okay? And why also he said that very clearly is because people don't understand my higher nature or my infinite nature. And we must understand, therefore, Maya is God's power to create. He uses the Maya power to create, to sustain and to destroy. So the Maya power of God is constantly working. The world is constantly changing, going through creation, preservance and dissolution. We have to understand the nature of this world and deal with it accordingly. Okay? Now, therefore, in verse 25 also, he says, Lokaha, Lokaha means the people of this world, they do not recognize my higher nature, which is, he gives us the qualities of his higher nature again to reflect upon. What is it? Ajam. It is birthless. He has used the word here, Ajam. Can see in the last line, the people of the world, Lokaha, do not understand my higher nature, which is Ajam, which is birthless, and which is Avyayam, which is imperishable. What we are experiencing, this world which is constantly changing, is not the higher nature but the lower nature of God. So we have to reflect and understand this very clearly. Okay. Any questions so far? Is it too deep or too confusing? Now we come to verse 26. So Krishna says now, Aham Veda. Veda, Aham Veda means I know, I am aware. Although God is in this creation, however, the difference is, he knows, he is the master of Maya. We are the slaves of Maya. Whereas God, being the creator of Maya, is the master of Maya. So he says, Aham Veda, I know of both my nature, my higher and my lower nature. And I know also of this entire creation, Bhutani, in totality. What does God, what is the difference now between God and us? Here he is telling us, I am the master of Maya, I know the higher and lower nature. Not only that, I know the Samatitani. Samatitani means the past. I know the past. Vartamanani, I know the present. And Bhavishyani, I know the future. That is the difference between Lord and us. We are a slave of Maya. Lord is a master of Maya. Lord knows the past, the present and future. We are only aware of the past and the present. But past here means right from the beginning of creation. Why is it that Lord knows everything from the beginning of creation? He is beginninglessness, isn't it? He has no origin. Everything came after God. The whole creation came after God. So he says, I know the past, present and future of all the creation. Whatever is going to come also, only God knows. Okay? His will. Right. In the earlier yugas, those were in the Sakya yugas was more pure. Now it's getting more difficult in the Kali yuga. So we have to work more hard. That's true. But you must understand that negativeness is not caused by God. The sattva, rajas and tamas is there. It depends on us how we, like our mind is lower prakriti. But whether our mind is sattvic, rajasic or tamasic, it's not depend upon God but depends upon our own actions. Is there, but he has given you the solution. What is the solution? Through devotion you can overcome Kali Yuga also. Depends whether we want to follow or we don't want to follow. It lies in our hands. Right. So, here he says, whereas the difference is, tu kaschana na mam veda. The difference is, he knows us, he knows our past, present and future. But whereas we do not know him, we do not know his past, we do not know his future. So there is a difference between us because we are engrossed and lost in this Maya. And he has also given us also the solution how to overcome this Maya. Now, therefore the Jiva is ignorant of the infinite peace, security and that is nowhere but within himself. And we also discussed because of Mala, Vikshepa, Avarana, we are constantly lost in this Apara Prakriti. So now here he says in verse number 27, Sarva Bhutani Sammoha Sarge Yanti. Sarva Bhutani, all the creatures, every creation in this world, Sammoha is bewildered. When did this Moha start? When did we all become bewildered by this attractive Apara Prakriti? When did this delusion of ours start? Sarge means the day you were born, this delusion started, isn't it? Because the first thing you see, it is said when the embryo is in the womb, it cries for God, you know, because it suffers in the womb, you know. It remembers its past, it cries for God. But the moment it comes out of the womb, it comes into contact with Maya, then what happens? It forgets everything. Comes into contact with mother, comes in contact with father, with the brothers and the sisters and the world and the wife and the children, by the time God is forgotten. So Maya is very attractive. It deluses. Right from birth itself, the delusion is so strong. The minute we come out, we get contact with Maya, we get delusion. So, he says, Sarva Bhutani, all the creatures, Sammoham, they are bewildered, they are deluded. When? Sarge Yanti, right at the time of, Sarge means right at the time of your birth. Every jiva is affected by ignorance. And thus, when you do not know your real nature, you seek that happiness from Maya itself. You seek it from outside. Thus begins your life. First you are fascinated by toys as a baby. Then you grow up. Then it becomes bigger toys like cars or bicycles and all that. Then bigger and bigger toys. The whole life you go on being fascinated. iPad, iPhone, etc., etc. It goes on. Throughout our lives we go on seeking that elusive happiness. You know, that's why sometimes it's very strange, these banks. I know you all of you have got called from banks. They call you. They say, you are very lucky, we selected you today. You get 20,000 loan. What, with 1% or 2% interest per annum? Just take the money. Or sometimes they give you 3 months without any interest. Just take 20,000. So I asked that officer, I take 20,000, what am I going to do with it? Sir, go for holiday. So you take the 20,000, you go for holiday, then what happens? You come back, you pay for it, isn't it? So this is our delusion. But if somebody doesn't understand, so attractive, okay, take and let me go for holiday. And this is how we get attracted. It's so attractive, it's so easy, the money is coming to you. Enjoy first, pay later, suffer later. So this is what we are going through. And therefore he says, what is it that deludes us? Dvandva, the dualities of the world. Happiness, sorrow, victory, defeat, all the various things affect us. Sometimes we are happy, sometimes we are sorrow. Sometimes there is joy, sometimes there is sorrow. Sometimes there is victory, sometimes there is defeat. We go through from one dvandva to another dvandva. And thus he says, from this arise all our ichha dvesha, our likes and dislikes. I like this, I don't like that. All the time we are constantly affected by our likes and dislikes. Dualities of likes and dislikes. We are thus in a state of delusion. So what happens when we have likes and dislikes? As a result of our likes and dislikes, what happens? I divide the world into two. This I like, that I don't like. This person I like, the person I don't like. This place I like, this place I don't like. We keep on dividing the world into, we separate the world into our likes and dislikes. And thus when we separate into likes and dislikes, what happens now? There is duality, then what happens next? When I separate the world into likes and dislikes, my whole life I am interested in acquiring what I consider is a source of joy, and my whole life I am busy getting rid of what I consider gives me a source of sorrow. So whole life either we are running after what we like or running away from what we don't like. Why? Because of our likes and dislikes. So he uses the word ichha dvesha, pairs of opposites. And therefore he says the world is nothing but a pair of opposites, because that is the nature of the world. You remember in chapter 9 there is one verse, anityam asukham lokam. The loka is nothing but anityam, it is changing. This world, the very nature of the world, it is subject to change, anityam, and thus it is asukham. It cannot give you permanent peace. But because of your likes and dislikes, you are constantly running after what you like and running away from what you don't like. But there are some blessed people who are somehow different from majority of people. Who are they? Some very blessed people who understand that this is the world, it is changing. So who are these blessed people? Who are these blessed people? They are the Gita students who are mentioned in the next verse. He's going to talk about that. So who are the blessed people? Verse number 28. Some are blessed people who, why do they have blessings? Why do we call these people blessed people? Why? They come for Gita classes. Why do you come for Gita classes?
You realize
Because of your punya karmas, your past karmas are driving you also. So understand, as I told you all before, there is some good karmas you have done before. Those karmas have ignited your, what we call your passion for knowledge, your interest in knowledge. These are all a result of your punya karmas. They are driving you now. Therefore, that's why they say, even any little bit of charity, whatever good you do, somewhere along the way, it will also help you, it will push you along also. So, that punya karma now is driving these people. And thus the mind is more purer. It's more purer, it is what we call seeking knowledge, right? So, now he says, now, in verse number 29, now he's talking about those fortunate people, the good people. And what is the word he uses here? Those people who are, sorry, verse 28, not 29, how did I get it? Sorry, yeah, verse 28, not 29, I skipped that. So, you see in the first line there's the word yesam tu, the word tu here is very significant. You see the second word in the first line, yesam tu. Tu here means, on the other hand, the different type of people. That means earlier he was talking about the sakama bhaktas. Now he's talking about who? Nishkama bhaktas. So he wants to differentiate. The word tu means another type of devotee. Who is this type of devotee? You see in the second line he uses the word punya karmana. They have good karmas in them. Their good karmas have brought them to this level. Punya karmas. So the good karmas are now acting in them. They are fructifying in them. And as a result, he says, so they have done good deeds before in their past, in this birth and their past births. And these persons are papam antagatam. That means they are, what we call their papam means they are, what you call it? Those sins. Sins are slowly coming to an end. So they have changed their life, direction of their life. Their past punya karmas are now pushing them. Slowly their sins are being diluted. They are getting less and less and less. So in the case of those people, they have less impurities in your mind. Because sin means what? Sin is not that place where you go to that, what you call the lokas and get put into hot oil and all. Sin means those, that dirt in your mind which is causing an impediment to your spiritual growth. That is the real definition of sin. So that means the less bad actions you do, the mind gets purified. The more good actions you do, the mind gets purified. That means the dirt in your mind reduces, which means what? Your barriers to spiritual growth get less and less and less. So those impurities are getting lesser, reduction of papam. When that happens, they have an interest to seek knowledge. They begin to think, they begin to aspire to seek this knowledge. So when he says they begin to think means what? Start before they were not thinking. Now they start thinking about knowledge. So all these punya karmas now are driving you. So when papam comes down, the mind gets clarity. The mind seeks knowledge. Right? And it gives us some direction in life also. It sets a direction in life. That's why we must not take this punya karmas lightly. All good karmas will drive us one day. Exhaust your good karma. If you exhaust your good karmas, that means you enjoy all kinds of favorable circumstances. And what about the bad karmas? That means you are saying that you built up all the good karmas and you exhaust everything. Right? What about the bad karmas? So if the bad karma still occur, then you have to go to the lower lokas and come back again. But if you exhaust your good karmas and your bad karmas, which means what? Moksha. Moksha can only be achieved when all the good and bad karmas also have been exhausted. Because if you have good karmas, you still have to come back. So how do you avoid coming back, accumulating good karmas? When you do selfless actions, when you do selfless actions, you don't accumulate good karma. And when you don't do selfish actions, you don't get bad karma. So when both these are exhausted, there is no more return here. There is no more birth again. So every action you do which is motivated for some result, you get the result. For that result, you have to come back again. So therefore, be very clear about your actions. They must be unmotivated actions. Okay? So, even in the Mundaka Upanishad, there is a very interesting part in that where one person is identified as a Brahmana. Now, the definition of a Brahmana is one who has got two qualities. One is, he must have predominance of sattva gunas. So, Brahmana doesn't mean that person who wears orange robes. A Brahmana in the Mundaka Upanishad is identified as one who has predominant sattvic gunas, number one. Number two, a Brahmana is one who has the Viveka Buddhi. That means his buddhi is awakened now. He or she is seeking knowledge. Such a person is called Brahmana, who is able to discriminate, use his powers of discrimination. So such people here, he says, are those who are called a Punya Karmana, who have predominance of sattvic gunas and they also have awakened to this knowledge. Okay. So, now when we say we have awakened to this knowledge, our discrimination means what? Very important, we have understood the fruitlessness of pursuing all these prayers just for our selfish needs. So when we have awoken to this knowledge, it means we understand that no matter how much I keep on pursuing all these prayers and rituals, I will never be ultimately happy. So that when that awakening comes, that is what he calls here as those people who are fortunate because of their past karmas, they have come to this understanding. That now they only seek the infinite and not the finite also. So therefore he says, what about these people? They are free from this delusion of pairs of opposites and they are people of virtuous deeds, they have got sufficient good karmas. Te dvandva moha nirmuktaha. Such people, they are nirmuktaha, they are free of what? Moha delusion and dvandva, pair of opposites. They are no more affected by this, they are not deluded by what is happening. Favorable, unfavorable circumstances do not delude them anymore. And most important, their actions are not driven by their likes and dislikes. They are beyond their likes and dislikes. So that means what I have to do is my duty, I do it. I am not guided by my likes and dislikes. What am I guided by? What is right and what is wrong. That should be the guiding part of our actions. I do what is right and avoid what is wrong. Not I do what I like and I don't do what I dislike. So what do these people do? He says, Mam Bhajanti, they worship me. Such people surrender to me. They seek me, the infinite. So when here Krishna says, Mam Bhajanti, they worship me, means what? They seek the infinite goals. There is clarity of thinking. And thus he says, what do they do? A very important quality arises in us. Here he tells us that quality. Vritta Vrittaha. Vritta means when we take a, you know, when we keep fast example, it's called a vrit. That means we keep a fast. That means we make a firm commitment that on this particular day I'm going to fast. But here Vritta Vrittaha means they are firm in their conviction that they want to seek that ultimate goal. So with their good karmas, they come to this conclusion that I am not interested in infinite goals, I am only going to seek the infinite goal. And thus he says they take that firm resolve that I will give priority to my spiritual growth. So they are firm in their conviction. That means this is not a half-hearted pursuit of knowledge. It is a full commitment of pursuing this knowledge, of pursuing the infinite goal. So with commitment, with dedication, they seek me, the para prakriti. And now, in the last two verses, we'll come back next week and discuss the nature of this nishkama bhaktas, and then we will go on to chapter 6. Okay. We end with the brain. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagadguru. Hari Om, thank you.